Right now on Tech Radio, strength through adversity.
Hi, I'm Artemis. I am a computer-generated AI voice, and you're listening to Tech Radio.
Every week online and on air with RT Radio, we bring you the very latest in tech from Ireland and the world. You're welcome to episode 1016, looking back on the seven biggest stories of the week, which has not been a good one for many of the big tech names, with the notable exception of Bitcoin. Also in our interview this week, Talent Hub's Ellie Doyle will be chatting with us about disability and accommodation in the workplace. Let's get to it.
From techcentral.ie, this is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
I'm Dusty. Joining me as always is Editor-in-Chief Niall Kitson. Niall, do you know what? You're like a stockbroker. That's what you are.
Am I?
Yeah.
Am I all about the money this
You're
week?
Just all about the money. He's up, he's down. This person, how dare they, you know, ignore the... Let's start off with Tesla.
Tesla. Okay. Well, they announced their results. And last week we talked about the job cuts that were coming up and their strategy of job cuts. Hey, Robotaxi, over here. That's totally going to happen. Despite announcing it in 2019 to roll out in 2020. And of course, we saw nothing. So it's a similar strategy over again. To which you would wonder, like, Elon, will you put down the tweet machine and actually do your job? The company you're actually CEO of is in trouble. Its share price is down 41% on its peak. I actually went and I looked up the share price for Tesla when it was at its highest. Would you care to guess what it was?
Oh, they did a stock split there a while ago. So it was like almost 1,000 a share at one stage.
Okay, well, the 5 years ago, right? Well, 2021, I've got a good high point for you.
Okay.
And it was up around $407.
Yeah, there
and,
you go.
And change.
Yeah.
Right? At the moment, if you were to go out and buy a share in Tesla, it's $162.13.
Okay, so that's down considerably.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not a good result. But there's been a couple of PR flaws, a couple of PR fails as well. We know that the affordable, inverted commas, Model 2 has been shelved. That's not happening. Instead, we have been promised a series of more affordable cars using the existing production lines that Tesla has, starting from next year. No word on actually what they will look like, what the models are, what the pricing will be. All we know is that these will be affordable, which is very, you know, it's pretty nebulous, you know. Total revenue down 9% year on year. Gross profits down 18%. Net profit fell 55%. So in net terms, Tesla pulled in $1.1 billion, and that's down something like 48, nearly 50%. Their cash is also down as well. So it has not been a good quarter for Tesla.
I've had an interesting thing with electric cars, because the headlines at the moment seem to be that electric cars are just not taking off as long as, as quickly as they expected or that they hoped to. And the EU has put a thing in place where you won't be able to buy a petrol car or a combustion car after 2035. I think it's 35.
Yeah,
all right.
35.
So another 10 years or so, right? You won't be able to buy a regular petrol or diesel car. It'll have to be electric. But people just aren't buying them in the numbers that they are hoping. And then I had a taxi the other day. I had two taxis, right? Mm-hmm. One fellow was driving a Tesla, and it was very nice, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And he was going, oh, they're great, and they're this, and they're that, and da, 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 da. And he was singing all the praises and how he loves it. And he goes, and they're only 45 grand. And I'm going,
only.
Yeah, yeah. Only, yeah, yeah. If you're running as a business, I can understand that. But for me, who's doing like, you know, whatever, 10,000 kilometers a year, I'm not going to spend that kind of money on a Tesla. Thank you. Then I had another taxi driver who was the absolute opposite. And he was like, oh no, electric cars, no buddy, there's no way you can convince me to do them, no way. And I kind of said, well, why not? Because I was thinking it was a problem with the car, the speed, the maintenance. And he goes, brother has one, he says he bought it 3-4 years ago for 50 grand or something like that. He says he can't even get 15 for it now.
Wow.
He wants to sell it. And he says the problem is that the secondhand value on electric cars is not good.
I believe that, because what is the single biggest component in an electric car that will degrade and isn't going to get any better.
And it's the battery.
It's the battery.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, and he said that if it's for that reason, and he said the battery is getting worse because they drove to Galway and he said they had to stop at least once, maybe twice, right, to recharge the car.
Wow.
He said, and not only was it recharging the car, but it took a half an hour stop. And he kind of went, forget it. And the taxi driver, he had a great story actually of somebody. He said that he had to pick somebody up. Basically, when you get into a taxi and you tell the taxi driver where it is that you want to go, they have to take you there. That's the law, right? Guy gets into a taxi, he says, right, I want to go to Navan. And after, 10 minutes going down the road, your man's thinking, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, look, I can't take you to Navan. He says, what do you mean, blah, blah, blah. He says, well, if I take you to Navan, I'm going to have to stop for 20 minutes on the way because I need to charge the car. There's not enough charge to get to Navan.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's a nightmare situation because, the taxi driver does want to go to Navan. He's legally obligated to go to Navan. The passenger wants to go to Navan. I'm saying Navan a lot, aren't I?
this it's, episode it's, is brought to you by Navan.
Navan carpets. Sure, they're great. And it, but it was the car that was letting them down more than anything else. Like, you know, and you can't have that. So I think that's another reason why. And that taxi driver is absolutely right. When you think about those kind of things, who'd want to buy an electric car? Because the reliability isn't there. I think they need to look at the batteries, the resale, and you need to be able to rock in. Do you know what I came up with? I came up with a brilliant one with the taxi driver. What? And I'm sure it is like this already. I thought it was a new idea.
Okay. I said,
do you know what you need? You need to have your car like your mobile phone, all right? So when you put it on charge, after 10 minutes, you get 50%.
Yeah.
All right, do the fast charge. And he's going, you can do that already.
Well, you know, the recurring problem... too expensive, problem with the network, it's not big enough, you can't find places to charge. Yeah. But now we are getting to the stage where the batteries aren't reliable, they're not good enough. Elon Musk posted a picture on X which had the comparative prices for annual servicing and repairs and upkeep of the different brands.
Yeah.
And Tesla was like the most affordable.
Yeah.
It was the lowest.
Yeah.
To which somebody posted... But what about the battery?
There you go.
There you go.
And that's the thing. Now, one last thing just on electric cars. My brother-in-law is like me. He's brilliant with numbers, okay?
Right.
And he's the first person who actually came up with it because he's got a brand new electric car. Can't remember what brand it is, but anyway, not Tesla. But he has a car. And I said to him, okay, Grant, so you've got the little electric feed coming out of the house and you charge the car every night. How much does it cost you to fully charge that car, okay? And it's a reasonable size car, right? He said it was €23.75.
Okay.
To fully charge the car. And I just went, wow, because to fill that car, you were looking at €70 in petrol.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the things are there, but there's some really big things that they still need to overcome.
And consider that most people buy their cars secondhand.
A lot of people. Well, I suppose. It was a good second-hand market. Anyway, listen, enough with electric cars, but let's stick with Musk because he is championing free speech with the Australian government. What goodness happened? Because this sounds just amazing.
Well, no, it sounds horrific is what it is. A video appeared online. Actually, there have been two tragic instances in Australia at the moment. There was the shopping mall attack and there was also an attack on a Catholic bishop. Footage and images of which appeared on X. Of course, they weren't moderated because free speech, absolutism and all that kind of code for I'm not paying to have this stuff moderated. Anyone that's been on X lately, you've probably come across some class of blue tick account that has posted the image or rather the short film of the bishop being stabbed. I was minding my own business on X one day and this thing auto played in front of me and it was disgusting, it was awful. And it's the sort of material that doesn't have a place on a social media platform like
now,
X.
This is the video, just so I'm clear, of the bishop being attacked.
Being attacked, yeah. Loathsome material. You shouldn't have this auto-played in front of you to begin with. And the Australian government came out and said, look, this isn't appropriate. we're going to have to sanction you. If you want to be a publisher as well as a platform, which it looks like, seeing as you're not going to bother moderating this, if you've decided that this is okay, well, maybe we should have a look at the way you are policed. To which Elon Musk has been flailing and shouting censorship and all this kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing how this shakes down in the bigger scheme of things. I imagine we are going to end up having to see this content removed, but you're kind of playing whack-a-mole with it. Because when you have Musk's fan base, because let's face it, that's what they are, and a piece of content, they will post it anywhere and wherever to prove the moral superiority of their dear leader.
Grand. Listen, before I get on to the biggest tech story of the week from the States, just slightly in Musk's defense, Donald Trump was on trial in New York and a guy was protesting, set himself on fire, okay, which is a terrible thing. Some US networks focused on the man as he was burning and others turned their cameras away. So I'm just going to say, you know, with that video of the bishop being attacked appearing on X, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. But then you also have the different angle where, well, it wasn't being shown live. Anyway, I'm just making the point more than anything else. Biggest story of the week from the States is definitely TikTok. This has been going on for years and years and years. And it looks like now that TikTok could very well be banned from the US.
Well, I mean, remember we did this in January where we were talking about Montana potentially banning TikTok and having a great old laugh over it altogether, because what's a single state in America going to do? If there is a ban to come in, it has to be done at the federal level. And this is something that had been trying to get its way through Congress, but was getting blocked. The House had passed measures to make sure TikTok is either sold by its Chinese parent company ByteDance or be banned in the States. And reasons for which being that information about American users was being collected and potentially mined by a foreign power. Who would have thought such a thing would be upsetting? It's kind of scary when it happens to America, isn't it?
Everything is scary when it happens to America, isn't it?
Yeah. But, so here's the thing. During the week, there was finally bipartisan agreement. It made its way through the House, through the Senate. Joe Biden has signed it into law. There is now a 270-day countdown, probably passed on a little bit since after recording this. For ByteDance to either sell TikTok's operation in America, not the whole deal, just the operation in America, or have it banned outright. It's already banned at government level. Government employees can't use TikTok. So this is sort of bringing it down to the people. Will this happen? I mean, there's no real option. There's no alternative, is there? I can't see a cool and hip young company like X coming up with an alternative.
Do you know what day it is 270 days from today?
No.
It's the 20th of January. And if I'm not mistaken, the 20th of January is typically when the new American president will be sworn in.
Oh-ho!
And TikTok will be booted out.
TikTok will be booted out.
Can you imagine if Trump does win that election and he is sworn in and TikTok is booted out on the same day? It'll be too much. But here's a question for you, all right?
Yeah.
What if TikTok is banned and the American market is just, it's not available there anymore. Is that going to kill TikTok?
Not internationally. I mean, TikTok has over a billion users, about 190 million of them are in the States. So it's not a huge proportion of people that use it worldwide, because bear in mind, it's a Chinese company. So that's where it got its start. I mean, ByteDance was, I think it was a lip sync app first, so kids used to go on and lip sync, and now they do other stuff. So I think ByteDance can live without the US market. Culturally, can US young people live without TikTok? I think that's a bigger question.
Oh yeah, because if TikTok is banned, YouTube Shorts will just step in. Boom, done.
Yep, done. No problems.
You know, so I've no worries about that. I wonder if TikTok will live without, if it's not available in the US, because there's just so much content that centres around the US in media. So, It'll be interesting to see. Okay, you wanted me to explain something, which is the other big story of the week. And that's the, which is that?
Okay, the Bitcoin halving. It happened, what, just over the weekend, last weekend?
It did, on Saturday, I think it was. Yeah, everybody's getting fierce excited about
it. We mentioned this previously, and there's been a little bit of fallout afterwards as the crypto community sort of realigns to this new reality. So basically, there can only be 21 million Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. That's the way it's set up. And you earn Bitcoin by either trading it, you know, engaging in, you know, rampant speculation, because people decide what the value of a Bitcoin is, or you mine it. And Bitcoin mining is tremendously energy and inefficient. And Bitcoin is basically a reward for solving a complex problem, which requires an awful lot of computing power, to the extent that the only way to mine new Bitcoin is to have a giant data center full of computers working on these problems.
But every new Bitcoin that you do mine, I think, is worth...
what's it at the moment?
I think it cost... the numbers have gone from my head. I think it was something like $9,000 or something that it cost.
Yeah.
That was the actual cost. But the value, of course, is up and around 60.
As we're talking right now, it's just below 60.
So the Bitcoin halving is the bit that you want me to refresh ourselves on. Okay. Essentially, when they started off Bitcoin, they said, okay, we're going to have 21 million and we want to have some kind of a rarity on this, like gold. Okay. Mm. And part of the algorithm... or the way that the maths was done, was that every X transactions, the amount of Bitcoin that will be paid to a developer or miner would have.
Mm.
Okay? So if one day you managed to mine an entire Bitcoin and you were getting $1,000 for it, after halving the next day, you would only get $500 for mining the exact same thing, okay? And as you say, with the costs as you're going through and data centers and electricity and da-da-da-da and whatever, all right? When you're only getting half of what you were the day before, it is a big thing. So that's what the halving is. Mm. And traditionally, well, when I say traditionally, there's only been three halvings, four halvings, something like that. But it's always, roughly, it works out roughly every 4 years. But it'll all depend on how much mining has been done and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But on the traditionally around the halving, there's a lot of excitement and stuff like that, because they kind of go, great, it's going to cost an awful lot more to create a new Bitcoin. That'll probably make it a little bit rarer, which would push its value up, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So that's what the halving is. Here is a thing, two things, all right, that people don't normally consider, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is, most of the Bitcoin that is available or that could be mined has been mined.
Right.
So there's very little Bitcoin left to be mined anyway.
Right.
All right. So that's one thing. All right. A lot of the excitement around Bitcoin at the moment is between people who have it and who are selling it and people who want to buy it. And it's all the trading is more exciting than the actual creating Bitcoin. So that is going to slow down anyway. And then the second thing is, because the value of mining a Bitcoin or the cost of mining a Bitcoin has got shot up, essentially, all right? So has the cost of doing a transaction on the blockchain.
Mm.
So if you are trading Bitcoin, your actual fees for transferring and stuff like that have, I don't know if they've doubled, but they've gone up significantly.
Right. Okay. So this is the knock-on effect of the halving.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that give you enough?
I think that does.
All right, Grant. What's that rattle in your pocket? It sounds like 10 bitcoins. As you worry about your Tesla shares.
It's the sound of success, Dusties. I've got them already.
Oh, dear God. Niall, if you're saying the rattling of coins is the sound of success, we have a problem. We have a problem. Anyway, that's my... I'm no expert on Bitcoin, but that's my understanding. Elsewhere in the news this week, the Olympics.
Yeah.
Coming up in July in Paris, and you reckon things are going well on Airbnb?
Things are going extremely well on Airbnb. There's a catch, but but here we go. About 15 million people are expected to go visit Paris for the Olympic Games. Of course, some sports are, you know, better attended than others, but I mean, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So it's, what, 26th of July to the 11th of August is when the Games are running. So what are you going to do? I mean, I imagine all the sort of hotels are already booked up by the, you know, visiting delegations. Mm. So how are you going to stay without being absolutely fleeced? So apparently there are loads and loads and loads of listings on Airbnb at the moment covering the period of the games. A website called AirD&A has done sort of an audit of it. So apparently, according to this website, there are 3,500 sleeping locations added every month. And in last month, Paris itself had 88,800 sleeping spaces. So, I mean, that could be like somebody's couch all the way up to, an apartment. Mm. It's just the nature of the listings. So it's a 67% jump. It's more than 2/3. Mm. However, the question is that how much are people willing to spend? Apparently, the base level is 500 euro per night.
What?
Yeah.
500 quid a night in an Airbnb.
Sorry, I got that wrong. Just below 500 is like normal. It's 500 plus a night is the premium end.
Oh, so wow. Okay,
let me correct myself there.
All right, okay. Yeah.
500 and up is regarded as premium. If you are going to follow the sprinting, I don't know how long these games last individually, but if you're going to follow your sport of choice and it's done over, what, 2 or 3 days or something like that, that's a lot of money just for, you know, sleeping somewhere. Yeah. Now, not to mention, you know, your travel costs, your food, etc., etc. You would really want to be going there. So the question is, how much are people actually going to be willing to pay? Are people happy enough to sleep on sofas, or is there going to be a matter of, do you know what, there is nobody, there is nowhere else left, we got to take the premium spaces? Or will there be a lot of premium spaces still floating around during the games itself? It remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's all down to supply and demand. I had actually heard that story early in the week, but from another angle, where they said so many properties had gone on Airbnb that there was an oversupply.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go to Paris. I wouldn't want to go anywhere near Paris for those games, and especially not on Airbnb, because I've found lately Airbnb is a bit rubbish, all right? A lot rubbish, actually, compared to a hotel, because you're dealing with amateurs, all right? And I don't want to like slur Airbnb hosts by saying that you're dealing with amateurs, but they're not letting out a place professionally. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not up to the same quality as a hotel, but they're charging the same price, all right? Mm. And then also, anytime I look at Airbnb and I'm kind of half thinking, will I go? Do you know what really annoys me? It's kind of like it's 100 quid and then there's a 15 quid booking fee from Airbnb and then there's another 20 quid cleaning fee on top of that. So you kind of go, well, hang on a minute. Do you know what? I might as well stay in a hotel. An Airbnb for me is, if I'm staying somewhere for a week, well, then that's great because I can get some shopping in and I can have my own breakfast and coffee in the morning without having to be worrying about it. Whereas hotels for 1 or 2 night, perfect. But anyway, that's fine. Let's get back to money, because you like money. You're your money man this week. Shares in Meta are down. But things are going well, so I don't understand this.
Well, okay, right. Yeah. Won't somebody think of the shareholders? That's the moral of this particular story. Meta Platforms, parent company of Facebook and Instagram, etc., came out and said, look, we are spending up to $40 billion on AI. This is our plan. So, you know, our revenue's doing well. I mean, they made, what, $36.5 billion for the quarter. That happens to be a quarter or a 27% increase in revenue. So that's pretty good. That's a nice thing to wheel out. However, as soon as it was mentioned that, oh yeah, and we're spending $40 billion on AI, the share price just went. It's like people just went, what? This much is going out of the company? It's like, no, we must sell. It's, what the hell kind of nonsense? I mean, Yeah, a large multinational company that can absorb pretty much anything. It absorbed more than €1 billion in GDPR fines. And AI is what spooks the investors.
Yeah, and these are the investors who found out about the investment in AI after the millions and billions that have gone into the metaverse.
Oh,
so
wow.
I mean, they stuck through the metaverse and then they decided to bail out on AI. I mean, what are they thinking?
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. And interesting thing, you know, we were discussing what's going to replace X later. Apparently, there's 150 million Facebook Threads users.
Mm.
That's not bad at all. I mean, when you look at the fact that X has, what is it, 400 million thereabouts. How many of those are actual humans? How many of those are sock puppets? I mean, if you know, if you're looking at actual human accounts on X, 150 million sounds very competitive.
Well, good luck to Meta. We'll see what happens with that over the rest of the year. Last story for today is Apple and, of course, their Vision Pro. Mm. I mean, it's only $3,500 for the VR headset. How's it doing?
It's not doing very well. Unfortunately, Apple are considering revising down the price. Because they have been selling what was the target on this? I can't remember offhand, but anyway, the thing is $3,500 for a VR headset at a time when VR headsets are coming down. Like, you can get an Oculus for what, €300, €350 now? Now, I mean, the base model, but all the same. So Apple released the Vision Pro for $3,500. They're putting it pretty much in the hands of developers, as with their other big hits. It's like, you guys go figure out what to do with this spatial computing thing that we're giving you. They have had to revise down. Actually, their sales forecast was for 800,000 units. I knew it was up around the million mark, but 800,000 units. Now they're saying, well, you know, if we hit 400,000 or 450,000, we'll be happy enough. They have scaled back their production, so it's not like there's a glut of devices on the market that they'll be looking to offload. It's just, okay, we're not going to make as many of these things as we thought. And bear in mind, they're not on sale outside the US, so there is scope for, you know, sales to increase as the number of markets that it's in increases. But you have to wonder, like, I mean, in recent, I mean, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Apple wrapping up Project Titan, which was to be their electric car. They discovered that, look, we're not going to be able to bring enough to the party. We spent too much on it. It's too big a financial risk at this stage. And they started letting people go. So now they're, I mean, what do you do with the Vision Pro? If it's not hitting the targets, if it's not resonating with people, what do you do?
I don't think it ever was going to resonate with people. I think when it came out with, and especially that price, we kind of went, okay, that's early adopters, and actually more than that, it's developers who want to get their hands on it and to see what can be done with it. And as we know, Apple make excellent hardware, and it's kind of get it out there in the world and see what the software guys come up with for uses to do with it. 800,000 I would have thought was ambitious. I would even say 400,000 is ambitious. You know, if they sold 100,000 of those around the world globally at that price to developers, okay, yeah, great, let's see if something comes of it. But if nothing comes of it, nothing comes of it.
I think we made the comparison was to Microsoft HoloLens, which is also an incredibly expensive piece of hardware, but they've always pitched it as, you know, this is for businesses, it's for medicine, it's for, you know, all these other high-end uses that, you know, we know you're not going to have one of these at home. We know you're not going to be watching television on it. This is for something else. And Apple, I don't want to say it's a mistake, but Apple's entire ethos is consumer-based, right? Apple does not go out and make products and go, this is for business, this, and silo it off in that direction. That's not what Apple do. So they were giving themselves a little bit of an uphill climb, and they were relying on the fanboys to get them through this. They were relying on the fanboys to come up with a use for this thing that nobody had ever thought of. And we haven't had that. We haven't had that killer app. We haven't had something that made us say, do you know what? $3,500? Yep. For what we're getting, that's cheap at the price. Has not happened. So if you're Apple, like, what do you do? No electric car, no augmented reality, no blended reality. What's left? I mean, Apple Silicon, granted, very, very impressive. But what else have we got? You're down to, you know, the two devices that Apple really did not want to be reliant on, which is the iPhone and the iPad, right? However, there is good news about all you iPad lovers. On the 7th of May, Apple has an event, I'm going to say, penciled in.
Oh, Niall, please.
And that is because the subtitle for the or the title for the event is Let Loose.
Okay.
And in the icon for it, the very nice piece of graphic design, is an Apple icon with some class of stylus in it. So,
Grant, so they'll be doing something new and exciting with the iPad that has probably been in the world for the last 10 years with other people.
An overpriced keyboard and an overpriced stylus, people get.
Well, there you go. That's Apple. Everything is overpriced. Very good, but overpriced. Listen, Niall, as always, thanks for keeping us up to date with the news this week.
Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland.
We are used to talking about diversity, equality, and inclusion from the perspective of creating a more balanced workforce for race and gender. However, workplaces should also be asking what they can do to become more accommodating to people with disabilities. Ellie Doyle is co-founder of the recruitment agency Talent Hub, and she shared her experience of having to reinvent her career and her business following a life-changing event.
Ellie, as someone who works in recruitment with an interest in accessibility, you're very often exposed to both sides of the issue, of both sides of the coin, if you will. So tell us a little bit about your backstory.
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me on, Niall. I have 2 decades, I think it is, of experience recruiting, I suppose, high-performing teams in high-growth areas such as technology, digital transformation, e-commerce. So I'd like to think I'd be very much have my finger on the pulse of changes in legislation and emerging trends in everything related to staffing and recruiting. But I suppose I have my own lived experience. If you want me to talk about that. So coming up for 2 years ago, I had a brain aneurysm, which was quickly followed by a stroke, which was quickly followed by me going into a coma. Beaumont saved my life. I could not be more grateful to the amazing people at Beaumont. Followed by a long stint in Talla Hospital, and then followed by the NRH. So I had to learn to do a lot of things again from scratch, mostly kind of dexterity and mobility issues, but also my memory, my short-term memory. Nothing wrong with my long-term memory, thank God. But so I'm still actually working with Beaumont with an amazing neuropsychologist who's helping me just find a new modus operandi. So I suppose now what I'm really, really interested in is this has shown me how it's like that new pair of glasses, I suppose. You see the world with a different lens. I've seen how difficult it must be for people who maybe, you know, aren't quite as confident or as articulate as where they have the knowledge. Like I have the knowledge, but I would struggle now if I didn't work for myself. And I'm so, so lucky now, not just to be alive, but the fact that I have the most amazing business partners and a brilliant team who've supported me throughout all this, and my clients and my candidates. And they all understand if I struggle to get to the point of something, they understand that I have the knowledge. It's just taking a little bit longer to get to the surface. They're very patient with me. But if I was to go out there and have to try and conduct a series of interviews, I don't think I'd stand a chance, Niall. And if I did make it through the interviews, I'm not sure I'd pass probation. And if I did, or the medical, a lot of companies have a medical test, medical clearance before they make an offer. But if I did pass probation, I just don't think I don't think my trajectory once in the company would be what it could be, because there's things that I struggle with. And yet I have all this knowledge. It'd be such a waste, I think, for me not to take those skills into the workforce. So I'm on a mission to try and advocate. You know, I'm getting involved with various think tanks or groups or communities that are going to try and advocate for changes to make the recruitment market more accessible, because there's some amazingly talented people out there, but because not everybody can conduct an interview the way you or I or the old I could, you know. So it's just trying to make that accessible to people like me, you know.
That point on being able to conduct an interview, do you think there's a skills gap out there for people going for jobs, and particularly maybe in the tech sector, where there's an awful lot of jargon, an awful lot of specialist skills, where people have to be aware that they're talking to people, you know, not just that speaks in jargon, which is a problem in and of itself, but might have an issue communicating what they know? Is there a significant skills gap or knowledge gap out there that really needs to be addressed?
Absolutely. And I think the managers or the hiring managers and the HR people need, and I know they want the education, they want to be more informed. I remember years ago, we're talking 12 years ago, when I worked at I was on site with a big tech company. And I only realize now, Niall, how ahead of their time they were. There was a floor of people, and they were the smartest people in the room. They were all came from an actuary background or whatever, and their performance evaluation or their modus operandi was different to the rest of us. And we were told, in no uncertain terms, don't be scoring, you know, the bell curve that people use for a performance evaluation. It was like, you know, stakeholder management, influencing skills, basically all these things around, you know, are they charming? Do they communicate? That was irrelevant. And it was actually unfair. You were losing out somebody who had so much to offer if that was deemed to be the measurement of, you know, were they a good employee? So what I've realized, so the analogy I always use, Niall, is if you book a flight from Dublin to, I don't know, Barcelona, you don't really need to know what goes on in the cockpit or in the engine, do you? You just want to get there at the price you were promised, at the time that you were promised, and that the flight is enjoyable. You don't need to know all those little extras or all the what I call the under the hood type of thing. So I would say how I do my job, my output, my end result is just as good, if not better, to my clients. Because I've learned some focusing techniques with the neuropsychologist I work with. My clients don't need to know, and nor are they interested in the fact that what meds I have to take and when and how that affects my sleeping patterns or anything like that. They just need to know that Ellie and Talent Hub are delivering a senior leadership team for this new product that we're launching or this part of the business. So I think if people can accommodate that, then an accommodation has kind of become, I'm hoping this changes, but accommodation has kind of nearly become a dirty word. Like, it's like, oh, are we making allowances? Like, everyone gets a medal on school sports day. It's this accommodation thing. But actually, there is there is a lot of benefits to accommodating people, because what I'm finding is that for a while I was convinced I'd lost my superpowers, but actually I'm developing new ones. So it's just, as I say, it's your modus operandi that changes. And as long as the outcome, the deliverable to the client or candidate is the same, is still of a very high caliber, then, you know, everyone is quite happy, you know?
So we hear an awful lot about soft skills. And, you know, it's great to be part of a team and this sort of thing. Do you think the definition of soft skills is broad enough to encompass the challenges you're facing? Or do you think, you know, the idea of soft skills is something that is, you know, overdue a reevaluation?
I hate the phrase soft skills. I'm going to paraphrase a well-known business person who said soft skills was a phrase invented by middle-aged white men to make something that women are naturally better at sound less important. But I prefer to know them as power skills. So, you know, ability to deal with ambiguity, that's, call it a soft skill, call it a power skill. Ability to deal with ambiguity, tenacity, resilience, I definitely have that. All of those things, they're things you can't learn on, and you won't see them on someone's CV, but you know, they bring so much to the table. An analytical mindset doesn't mean you have to be an analyst. It just means, you know, the number one skill in demand for a significant amount of time was complex problem solving. And there's no degree for that. That's just a mindset thing. It's you know, do you have the ability to look at something and, you know, say, okay, well, what's really going on here, and how can we make this better? How can we improve it? So things like that, I think, and technology and artificial intelligence and automation is actually taking a lot of the heavy lifting off us. And what it's doing now is it's allowing these skills to shine through. So competencies, I do a bit of lecturing to students, to final year students in various universities on this. And I always say to them, in the absence of hardcore experience while you're early in your career, don't forget you've got all these skills. And, you know, resilience, I say, complex problem solving, initiative is a huge one. Someone who can take the ball and run with it. So I think having those things, and I think employers acknowledging the importance of those things is a really nice change to see that I've observed. I say to every client, okay, so you want them to be a Python developer or an Android or whatever that is. You know, tell me a bit about the person. Who is going to describe to me the person? And then we'll go and we'll find them. Because there's no taxonomy on LinkedIn for those things. Mm. Although Sir Richard Branson did get LinkedIn to add dyslexia as a skill, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think I don't know if that's urban myth, but I think that's true. I think that's true, because one of the best people that ever worked for me was dyslexic, and her work was of a phenomenal standard.
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, the challenges you're facing yourself, and also the challenges companies are facing in terms of getting the best out of people. Very often this requires some sort of regulatory effort as well. Is there anything happening at either domestic or European level to make that happen?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, next year, Niall, the EAA, which is the European Accessibility Act, comes in to force. And that's going to be like, do you remember when GDPR came in, May 2018, I think it was? It wasn't a nice to have. It was a you must do this. So this is going to be exactly the same. And if your if I take it back to a recruitment context, if your application system or interview system is deemed to be ruling people out because of, you know, a disability or other challenges they have, it could be very, very bad for the employer. It could have legal ramifications. So it's just about giving people a fair crack of the whip, I think. It does have to still be, you know, a meritocracy, I think, and the best person for the job, of course. If you don't drive for medical reasons or you know, whatever other reasons, then there's probably no point in applying for a job that requires you to drive. But there's, you know, there's some really, really talented people who, if a few accommodations are made for them, they have so much to offer. So if your processes are ruling those people out by not allowing them to interview or to successfully start that role, then there will be legal ramifications.
So just finally then, how do you find the employment landscape is changing? I mean, we do deal with stereotypes about how people in the tech industry, you know, are, you know, whether they're, you know, incredibly introverted or even perhaps on the autism spectrum. Do you find that there is an increased awareness that that people do face these issues and that it's not a big deal? Or is it that sort of HR department box ticking exercise that, okay, we have to have X number of people from different backgrounds, and that's kind of our function to create sort of a balanced environment, possibly at the expense of a productive one?
Yeah, it's, do you know what, for all of the tragedy and the negativity that came out of obviously the pandemic, and I am respectful that it was very tragic for a lot of people, one of the good things was it normalized the whole the different approach to working. I remember literally a couple of weeks before certainly from a home perspective, before Leo Varadkar's announcement, being at an International Women's Day event, and Adam Harris, who's the brother of our now Taoiseach, Simon Harris, who's a big advocate for autism and neurodiversity in the workplace, he came on the stage with no shoes on, like Sandy Shaw, and he explained that to him that was like nails on a blackboard, and it was a very powerful opening statement. And he said, you know, I can do this now, but he said, would you employ me if I didn't wear shoes, if I, you know, the sensation was causing him trouble. And he was talking about, you know, if different fabrics don't, he was basically talking about, he said, why is everybody, especially in tech, talking about the shortage of good talent? He said, when you won't give people like me the chance, who maybe don't want to work 9 to 5 or don't want to wear a suit or don't want to get on a bus, where people with sensory issues or that are very, very sensitive to noise. Getting on a bus or a Dart at a peak time is their idea of hell. And he was, and then obviously, very ironically, a couple of weeks later, the world changed and it was enforced. And suddenly employers went, hey, we can do this. It turns out they are just as good at working just at home. So it was an enforced change. But like personally, as a recruiter, I think it's a great change, because for years I was saying to people, would you look at Niall, for example? But Niall has 3 kids and he lives in Port Leash and he doesn't want to come to Bagot Street every day. And it was like, no. It was, you know, if you're not in the office, and or Niall likes to work these hours because that works for him. No, no. Whereas now I think it's much more, it's opening up the talent pool to employers and it's opening up the opportunities to candidates. So, you know, for all the sad stuff that came out of COVID, this is one good thing that I think is here to stay. And I think it does facilitate getting the best out of people that I'm sure you're familiar with. There's a cartoon, a famous cartoon of it's like a professor at a desk and there's a snake, a monkey, a fish, and I forget what else, a tiger or something, or an elephant. And it's like the first one up to the top of that tree wins. And the point of it is if you measure everyone by the same metrics, someone's always going to win and someone's always going to fail. Instead of and David McWilliams, who I've had the pleasure of listening to many, many times, including last week actually at the ERF conference, he's always saying this. He says our measurement of who can regurgitate he sometimes swears and sometimes doesn't depending on his audience, but who can write like feck is what I'm going to say over a 3 hour on a hot June day about the Bayeux Tapestry or something like that. And you know, they're the people that get the points, they're the people that get into the good universities and inevitably get the good jobs. But he said, why are we, you know, so actually as a mother, my son just recently did his mocks for the junior cert, and the thing that David McWilliams was going on about for years, CBAs, my son just did them. So I've just had firsthand experience of that. And he did these assessments, and he did one on the Rubik's Cube. He did one on Liverpool's best five comebacks of all time. So no bias there for what team he supports, but it was just, he came to life. He's not interested in, he's not that type of, that's not how his brain works, but he came to life when he had to research something and present on it and present his findings and articulate them. So my point is, if we just measure, if we want to be inclusive, we have to look at everyone is bringing something to the table. It's just how you get Niall to be the best version of Niall is different to Ellie. And that's what employers have to do. And actually, everyone benefits Niall because everyone's got something to offer, I think.
And that was Ellie Doyle, co-founder of the recruitment agency Talent Hub, chatting with Niall Kitson. You can find out more about them at talenthub.ie.
This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
That's it for our show this week. Of course, we have more stories online, which we weren't able to get into the podcast for you. What else is there, Niall?
Yeah, we've got the finalists for this year's Tech Excellence Awards have been revealed. We've got another milestone for the National Broadband Plan. And get this, Japan has a plan to beam solar energy to Earth from space.
Oh, cool. You'll find those stories and more online at techcentral.ie. Of course, we're back again next Friday with a brand new show online and with RTE Radio 1 Extra. And do remember, please share our podcast with a friend. Do tell them to look up Tech Radio Ireland on Apple, Spotify, or now on YouTube as well. Until next time, from myself, Dusty Rhodes, and from Niall Kitson, as always, thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Remember, you can get the latest Irish tech news with hourly updates, daily newsletters, and more at our website, techcentral.ie. Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland, or listen with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Tech Radio is produced by dustpod.io for techcentral.ie. From me, Artemis, live long and prosper.